But the stuff that resonated with me, because it gave me some answers around how to assess this thing, because I had a guy in here named Robert Guffey a few weeks ago. He's a professor of literature out at the University of California in Long Beach. But he wrote a book called Operation Mind.
I have the book, yeah.
Well, did you take a look at it? Because he really sort of gives you a historical overview of conspiracies and how they've built on themselves. And you do that as well, that, you know, the go-to conspiracy, and I think you frame it in the book somewhere as being a go-to for, you know, like thousands of years, is blame the Jews. Mm-hmm. So it's all going to end up there, right? But I thought what was interesting and what you're talking about now in Naomi Wolf being used by the right, volunteering for it, but I think characterologically or psychologically, I want to get this out so I don't forget it. It seems to me that when she came out criticizing Israel, that the way that fractured the left in terms of respecting her as an intellectual, I think that kind of broke her. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, she realized, like, well, why don't I just go somewhere where they'll all believe me and I'll, you know, I can remain a star as long as I stay within the talking points of that context.
I think it was a really important point on the journey where she said and wrote some really important and good stuff, I think, in defense of Palestinian human rights. You know, she identifies as a liberal Zionist, but she was shocked at the willingness to bomb civilians in Gaza and the death toll it took, particularly on children. And she started to write about it. And, you know, maybe she used some overblown language. She always does. But she was essentially absolutely right. And she claims that it cost her a position at Barnard, that she was, you know, like she was called an anti-Semite and, you know, by this rabbi who, you know, does this professionally.
Sure.
And so I think, you know, the thing about Wolf, and I write about this in the book, is that even though people have been conflating us, one of the differences between me and her, other than that we're different people, other than, you know, I grew up in Canada, she grew up in the States, she has blue eyes, I have brown eyes. The biggest difference that I care about is that she's a liberal and I'm a leftist. Her analysis is quite mainstream,
right.
Always has been.
Yeah.
The beauty myth and her other feminist books have really, you know, they were not a radical critique at all of patriarchy.
Right.
They were basically saying an argument for women to be treated. It was a little bit like lean-in feminism, like Sheryl Sandberg, you know.
Yeah.
She was very explicit that she thought that this beauty standards were holding women back from being able to compete with men on equal terms in the workplace.
Which is not a breakthrough.
No, no.
Critique.
She believed in the system and she wanted it to be fair.
Right. You think the system of capitalism is totally
corrupt. I think you could make the system, you could remake the system so that women and people of color and queer people were as perfectly represented in elite spaces as they are in the population, and the system would still be incredibly cruel and the planet would still burn.
Right.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is that she believed in the meritocracy. She followed a certain kind of career path. You know, she married somebody who worked, you know, he was the editor of the New York Times op-ed page. Then he was a White House speechwriter for Bill Clinton. She worked as a political consultant for the Democratic Party. She was one of Al Gore's top consultants in 2000. And so what happened with Israel is that she kind of got kicked out of liberalism's house.
Right.
There, you know?
And that betrayal, I think, just broke her ego.
It broke her ego, and she needed a new house.
Right.
Like, she needed somewhere else to go.
It's interesting she'd go to that house, the Mirror World house. Now, so this is the thing that I've been, the dots you connected for me, that the Mirror World, the primary tool, once they've sort of tapped in and exploited the panic and fear and anger of the denizens of the Shadowlands and GOP, and we'll talk about the Shadowlands in a minute, GOP operatives who really turn out to be uninspired grifters, you know, most of them, and shameless fascists at this point, is this appropriation of language. Now, you really kind of thoroughly break that down, but I if we could talk about it, that there is this futility on behalf of liberals and leftists that they've taken all the language. It's sort of, I know you are, but what am I? Mm-hmm. And then they take it And then we're standing there going, well, what do we say now? But Mike, how does that work? I mean, is it seems so organized, and it seems to go all the way down to even the, you know, the sort of seemingly dumbest of righty influencers, that they just kind of figured this system out. All you got to do is take the word tyranny, authoritarianism, any sort of labeling of victimization, and apply it to us instead of letting them have it.
Well, I don't think it's as simple as that. You know, like,
okay.
I'll give you, like, there's no doubt that they just appropriate wildly. But for like, one example that I think a lot of people have seen is anti-vax, like anti-COVID vaxxers, holding up signs that say, like, my body, my choice, right?
Right.
I mean, that's obnoxious. It's hypocritical, because some of these same people are perfectly happy to cheer the Supreme Court's attacks on Roe v. Wade. But I don't think that the fact that they are saying my body, my choice materially hurts the movement for reproductive freedom, because that movement is really organized and is actually doing a lot to defend reproductive freedom.
Right. Right.
So where I think we're really screwed is when they appropriate ideas that we're not really using, that we have stopped using.
Right.
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. And this was one of my more chilling moments in listening to Bannon.
Yeah.
I was tuned in one day, I think it was like December 2021, and he had this little audio montage, or I was listening, but it was probably a video montage too, where his producers had cut together the intros and outros to a bunch of cable news shows that said, brought to you by Pfizer. So it was like Anderson Cooper, brought to you by Pfizer, you know,
sure.
Like Rachel Maddow, brought to you by Pfizer,
right.
You know. And the thing that chilled me about it was it was pretty indistinguishable from the kind of media education, like with help from Noam Chomsky, that I did, that
yep.
we did, like at teach-ins in the 90s, you know, when we were talking about how the corporate media, was sort of bought and paid for, and there's certain critiques that would never make it on, and
right.
we had all read Manufacturing Consent. And I'm not throwing Manufacturing Consent under the bus. I think it's a really good book.
Yeah.
What chilled me about it was I realized, who on the left is talking about this anymore? We really are not talking about corporate control of the media anymore. There isn't a movement that is talking about this anymore.
Because is it a lost fight?
I think because partly we become so reactive to them, right? So we are, like, I think Trump broke the political sort of spectrum. So we just became kind of
broke
anti-Trump.
The world.
Yeah.
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 Read unhappy MacNam, unhappy MacNam, Systat uptime 9.
I have been awake for 9 hours, 2 minutes, 36 seconds.
At answer, dear.
I'm as tired of it as you are. And I hope that our children will come to love us again in some better world than this.
Yes. Damn. Thank you for question.
Okay,
exit
me,
center to Funway.
What did you do to me,
Mr. President, okay. I'd like to introduce you to
illegal character in line.
Rubber.
Go away.
What's happening?
I'm sorry. This ride is closed.
This ride is
exit
closed.
Exit center to
Funway. I've been waiting for 10 minutes from here to listen to the president talk to me. What's happening? I think he broke the power off. He broke the president.
And so the more systemic analysis of how, like, the world that produced Trump, a lot of the parts of it were abdicated. Like, so we weren't occupying those spaces. So then somebody like RFK gets to be the one who's talking about big pharma and is talking about corporate capture of government agencies. Listen, I used to talk about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a whole movement that was talking about, you know, corporate capture
on
of our
left.
Governments on the left. But where is that movement now? So this is what is scary. This is how fascism rises. It is a dialectic between the abandonments of neoliberalism, the latent and never disappearing white supremacy and Christian supremacy, but also the left not doing its job. Because, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this, but Rosa Luxemburg did say it was socialism or barbarism, and barbarism is ascendant, and there isn't really a powerful socialist movement. You know, this is why Bannon was terrified of Bernie Sanders, because he didn't want to run Trump against Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders makes Trump look like the counterfeit that he is, right?
Right.
He wants to run Trump against a centrist corporate Democrat because Trump looks authentic next to them, right?
Right.
So for me, like what chills me, what scares me is when they appropriate something I know that we have left unattended.
Well, but isn't that, look, and I'm guilty of it. I know that, you know, I am a progressive at heart, but in function, you know, I don't do the work. I pay lip service to things. I don't get a sense, and I used to talk about this with Cedar, and Cedar's, you know, a real left guy. But it doesn't seem like there's an organizational consistency. And that was always the joke, like when we used to be at Air America. You know, the left is this huge tent, and, you know, no one can decide on where to sit or who's going to have the table or what we're going to talk about. Or it sort of trivializes it, but there's a fragmentation that's implicit in it, but also stifles organization, no?
Yeah, I mean, there is at the moment, you know, and you know, one of the things I write about at the end of the book was, you know, I was involved in the Sanders campaign. I was one of his surrogates on his climate policies. I'd never really gotten involved in a presidential campaign before in that way, but I went to five states with Bernie.
And... Yeah.
Oh. Well, come on. Oh, well, I must go where the bozos go,
yeah,
kid.
I'll bet. So long.
Yeah, longer the better.
Honk, honk.
Well, listen, kid, I'm alone. I got the clone. Maybe we'll run into each other on the fun way, huh?
Yeah, you bet, honky. Honk, honk.
Oh. Howdy, little partner.
Oh,
well,
no.
Which way you going now, huh?
I don't know, Mr. Beat.
Yeah, that's right. You could cut him off at the past.
What?
And there's a very particular sort of experience of people who were part of the Bernie campaign, the experience of the pandemic, because it coincided exactly with Bernie's collapse, right? So like these, like, and so we went from like the highest political high any of us had ever experienced. Like I was in Nevada when Bernie swept the strip, and
yeah,
we were like, what is happening? Like the Las Vegas strip just voted overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders. You know, we thought anything was possible, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like the people who make that city work, who clean the slot machines, who vacuum the hotel rooms, just stood up and said, we are going for universal health care and like a $15 minimum wage.
His name is Aloof Maloof, and he owns Great Satan's Towers, where you
yes.
boys went and took
oh,
some of these
yes.
slides.
Oh, yes. Well, right. I see the connection now. I
yes.
wasn't hip to the jive.
I didn't know that. I knew your name, sir. I've never really
Aloof, you. I understand that you own a big athletic team right now.
That's right. Vegas is not my only, it's not the only dice I roll.
Yeah.
Aloof.
Oh, it is a dice rolling team? Dice
no,
ball.
No, not dice ball. This is b-ball. It's
b-ball,
yeah. It's b-ball. I own the Sacramento Kings.
Oh.
And you may remember 2 years ago when we were up against the Lakers, or the Fakers, as we call them in Sacramento. We burned their jersey in effigy, and ever since our team has been cursed. So I've decided to change my luck and come out here to Vegas and make things happen with my new casino, Great Satan's Tower, the tallest building in Vegas.
Aloof, that brings us to some
magnificent
theme music.
Building. Yes,
and we have
great,
sent out our
time,
two
yeah.
wonderful local news personalities, Ray and Hal. And Hal, Ray, what's that first slide?
Well, let's take
up?
A look and see. This is actually
it's a cost me a fortune.
That's a picture of our bathroom. We had it remodeled recently. I don't know how that got on
I thought
here.
That was one of
that's
our.
That's the tub. That's
yeah.
the hot tub.
Can
it's
you get
nice.
To my
yeah,
hotel?
Well,
I'm a
sorry.
Busy guy.
I didn't have a chance to check these out.
I got
that's
games
the
to fix.
Exercise machine.
Now wait a minute. Is
there...
that Hal on the exercise machine?
Well, let me go back and see.
Would you check that? Yes, that is. This is actually the exorcise
now,
machine. Have you heard of an
see,
exorciser?
His head is turned all the way around the wrong way.
It's one of our big sponsors.
The Devil Master?
Yes,
yes,
it is.
Yes, yes, indeed.
We have
yes,
one of those yes, in our sports club right behind the Ghost Bar.
Oh, and here
oh.
we are. Here we are in the
there
elevator,
it is.
Going
yeah.
up in the elevator now. And you can see I've got a picture of the...
Well, that's a
numbers.
Picture. That's a picture of the mirrors in the elevator. And
yep. You see the numbers, though.
Yes.
You see,
oh, yes,
that's
going
very
up.
Confusing. This part.
I thought this was interesting because you see the numbers seem to be moving.
Let me
yes.
explain why the numbers are moving.
Why?
You see, because our elevators work off of the Keno machine. So the only floors you can get off at are the numbers you hit in Keno. So say like you bet on 34 and it doesn't come up and you're on the 34th floor.
There we are.
You got to go back to the casino until you hit.
Hold it on that one, Ray.
All right.
Is that the Mystic Crocodile we've heard so much about?
Yes, it is. It is. And they were serving Mystic Crocodile Tail croquettes up at the top of the Satan's Tower on this day. There we are. Here we
I'm
are
enjoying
now.
Enjoying my portion, as you see. They give you a quite sizable portion.
And look at this. Now we're both going to take a bite out of the same piece of tail.
Oh, those are those.
We
are,
eat towards those, the middle.
Those are those are just promotional croquettes.
It looks like we're actually.
Will you just? You're getting me seasick.
Boy, those.
Give me that machine.
Wait.
Get your hand on that machine.
Now, wait a minute, Aloof. Let me ask you a question because
I wish you would.
I see some pretty big boys in this, and some women in very short skirts.
Oh yes, yeah. Here they are.
Is there some kind of a theme I'm missing here? Something to do with athletics and sex, perhaps?
No, just sex. Sex. Oh, you come to Great Satan's Tower. We guarantee that you're going to get the kind of sex you can't get at home unless you live in Great Satan's Tower. Then it's the kind of sex you get every night.
Could you close the door to the outside of the studio?
And then it all just shut down all at once. Like the world shut down, the Democratic Party rallied around Biden, and you know, and so I guess what I'm just saying is I don't think all is lost. Like we have had moments where actually the left was stronger than it's been at any point in my lifetime. We didn't win. We didn't win. But that, like, look, I grew up in the 90s. Like, we thought no one liked our ideas.
Right.
You know, there's an incredible proof of concept when you look at Bernie, when you look at AOC. Like, so I wouldn't say the left is just hopeless. It can't organize.
Right.
But we've had a few blows. There's no doubt.
But I think one of the things that you were mentioning before and about the mirror world, so we can, because it is a subtitle of this book, Your Time in the Mirror World, is that by appropriating these ideas that you say were abandoned by the left, they build this structure of being the people's sort of voice, right? But I think inherent in the sort of my body, my choice thing, that sort of illustrates the other tool of this right-wing momentum, which is that constant false equivalency, constant.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a lot of people that have been enabled by people like Bannon, like Rogan and Huey platforms to believe that they have an intelligence because they're now up to speed with something. But what they're up to speed with is the mirror world, which makes it seem like they've really got a handle on things.
What?
Oh, that Louise Wong's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare from.
Oh, not now, Mudhead. They need me at the last meeting of the Philatelist Club.
I didn't know you masturbated.
Aw, creepies, Mudhead. Where's your school? Spirit.
That's in the rumble seat. You want to snort?
Oh, very funny.
Sure is.
Gee, everybody at Moore Science High is an extracurricular activity but you.
Well, doesn't Louise count?
Only to 10, Mudhead. You know, that's just it.
Just what?
Well, we're the leaders of tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's today.
Well, yeah, but what are you going to do tomorrow after we graduate?
Oh, well, I thought maybe I'd go out and find a bunch of guys who dress alike and follow them around.
What?
Or I could go pick up a couple of girls.
Oh, is that all you think about, picking up things?
Yeah.
Golly, Mudhead.
But I think a lot of it is driven by false equivalency.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, false equivalencies with, there's this strange kind of victim jealousy that is happening. Like, and I don't think it's a coincidence. It's one of the things that I get into in the book, that this COVID denialism movement really takes off after the racial justice uprisings in the summer of 2020, when every industry is looking inward and going, wait a minute, maybe we should hire some black people. Maybe we should have some black shows on television. Like maybe we actually have to do some of these things that we have not been doing for so long. And then you have this movement filled with, and a lot of the people leading it are white women, white middle-aged women like me, who are suddenly saying, it's apartheid, it's Jim Crow, I can't breathe, but they're talking about putting on a mask. You know, just wild appropriation and wild equivalencies.
And it happens so quickly.
Yeah.